Thank you very much. If you can, everybody hear me? The microphone's working. I hope it is. In any event, so again, I'd really like to thank very much the organizers for inviting me to give this presentation. I should say that actually I had initially sort of the dilemma on what work to present, because I've had recently the fortune of having a student next to Hawaii who's done some very nice work in the area of disjunctive programming. But then, because that work has been aimed, quite a bit more towards linear problems, I thought it might be perhaps more appropriate to present this work. This is actually PhD work by Ram Kumar Karupia. And as you can see, the topic has to do with Lagrangian-based branch and cut algorithm for the global optimization of non-convex mixed integer non-linear programs. And I would say the main intent, if you wish, of this talk is really, first of all, to give you the general formulation of these type of decomposable problems, but then also with a very specific emphasis on applications. And so, first of all, the motivation for this work, well, those of us who are working, of course, in engineering type of problems, in my case, chemical engineering problems, of course, find all the time that real-world problems are almost always non-convex, so that's certainly good news for those of you who are interested in global optimization. There's a lot of work to be done. And of course, depending on the problem, I would say, certainly for process type of problems, it's not the situation where you find billions or millions of local optima. But there's usually still a good number of local solutions. And finally, a global solution can have also especially a big economic impact. Now, the problem, as we'll see, however, it is, of course, hard to find the global optimum to some of these problems. And in particular, the two applications I'm going to be describing later, one has to do with water networks, process water networks, where the main objective is to reduce the consumption of fresh water, which, as you know, is, of course, a very important concern. And the second application I'll be talking about is related to crude oil scheduling. It's actually a project that we've been working together with Exxon Mobil for the last 2 years or so. So the one thing about these problems, as we're going to find out, is that in addition to the fact that they may exhibit special structures in the sense of having, for example, bilinear, concave terms and so forth, we're going to find out that many of these problems do have decomposable structures. And the reason for this is many times these problems represent, for example, when you have discrete distributions, two-stage programming type of problems, and these can, of course, immediately be decomposed in terms of the scenarios. Or, let's say, when you have planning and scheduling models, and this is going to be the crude oil scheduling model, where you could think more of a spatial decomposition in the sense of having a big system being decomposed into the various components. And then, of course, in general, we can talk about engineering design models. Now, the one issue here, and I think especially in the previous presentation that Chris Rudolph gave, which was a very nice presentation, in terms of the basic theory, when these methods are developed, it's natural, of course, to concentrate on somewhat smaller dimensions. The problem, as we're going to find out here, is that these problems tend to be large in size. And by large in size, I don't necessarily mean, if you wish, millions of variables, but typically a few thousand variables. And I think, as is well known, and I don't think I need to mention or emphasize this point to this audience, global optimization problems are, of course, NP-hard. And one of the issues then here is especially the issue of scaling. In other words, as we increase the problem size, unfortunately, especially with deterministic optimization algorithms, it really becomes very difficult to solve these problems to guarantee global optimality. And the question of challenge is, what can we do to hopefully at least overcome some of that? So I would say the basic goal of the presentation then here is to develop an algorithm that can globally optimize large-scale models. And I would, again, qualify large-scale, not by huge scale, but rather by reasonably large scale, so that these current algorithms can not solve, but are still, if you wish, not maybe at the ultimate frontier where we'd like to do. And again, what we'd like to do is to exploit decomposable structure. So what's specifically the problem that we're looking at here? Well, it's basically a mixed integer nonlinear programming problem where, as you can see, we have a term in the objective, sx of y, now defining among the variables, and a summation term over n different scenarios in different time periods. So what we have in this formulation, let me just focus here, in terms of the constraints h prime and g prime, these would be linking constraints because they are containing the linking variables. In contrast, hn and gn will be the non-linking constraints, in other words, those constraints that only apply to a particular, again, scenario or a particular subsystem. So more importantly then, given then these type of constraints, the variables that we're going to have here, the x and y, these are going to be the linking variables, x are continuous variables, the y are going to be the discrete variables. In the case of the non-linking variables, which participate in these non-linking constraints, un and v of n, un would be continuous and v of n would be, again, binary variables. And again, just to review very briefly, where would this type of problem arise? For example, again, I mentioned before, in two-stage stochastic programming type of problems, x and y would be the stage one variables. These could be continuous and discrete. And the un, vn would be the second stage variables, you know, with the one for which we have recourse over each of the various scenarios. So the question, it's very clear here that as n, capital N increases, of course, the size of the problem can increase quite substantially. I should mention, though, although the two-stage stochastic programming problem maybe seems to be a more natural, if you wish, mapping through this representation can also correspond, as I mentioned before, to spatially distributed subsystems, where, for example, you would have UNN and V of N being the equations that correspond to a given node, and the X and Y would be the interconnection variables among the various subsystems. Now, the problem, then again, when we're faced with a model like this one, it's large and often very difficult to solve to guarantee global optimality. And the basic issue here, we are interested, of course, as we're going to see, in solving problems where we do have a special structure. So we would still like very much to use deterministic global optimization because, of course, having at least a guarantee, or if not, nothing else, at least a valid bound is very important. The problem, however, is that very often, at least a straightforward application to something like a spatial branch and bound may be computationally inefficient. And what's the underlying reason? Well, the underlying reason, again, is referring back to the nice presentation that Chris gave before, there's this constant, if you wish, aim or striving towards improving the lower bounds of the relaxation of the original problem. And the problem seems to be that as the problem size increases, the quality, if you wish, of these bounds tend to degrade. And because of that, then the search that is required, of course, you know, is going to take, of course, a lot of time. So what is one of the approaches that we might take towards a problem like this one? Well, of course, one of the things we might think of doing here is to apply a Lagrangian decomposition, because Lagrangian decomposition does offer sort of a natural way to exploit the decomposable structure of these large-scale problems. Now, what we're going to do is actually not apply directly Lagrangian decomposition, but make use of some of it. But before we do that, let's see how do we simply bring problem P to a decomposable form. Well, that's fairly straightforward. What we do is just simply the linking variables x and y, we're going to produce n identical copies, and if you wish, and disaggregate them, if you wish, for each of the n scenarios, for each of the n subsystems that we're going to have. Then the linking constraints that we have before, we're just simply going to rewrite in the form of saying that x1 has to be equal x2, x2 equals so forth up to xn, and the same thing for the y. So then these now become, if you wish, for the sake of the nomenclature, I'll call these coupling constraints. And again, the motivation by doing that is that then, of course, the problem decomposes more naturally in all the variables, because then, as you can see, these equations h prime and g prime have now also, if you wish, their local variables, and now the complicating constraint or constraints here are these new coupling constraints that require that the x's over the different scenarios and the y's over the different scenarios be the same. So essentially then having reformulation, we apply Lagrangian decomposition. This is done just simply by dualizing these coupling constraints. So of course, we add the corresponding terms of the difference of the x's, xn and xn plus 1, yn minus 1, n plus 1, multiplied, of course, by the Lagrange multipliers. And then in that way, of course, for fixed values of the multipliers, then we have basically now a problem that can be decomposed into these n different scenarios. Again, this is quite standard, really nothing special, nothing new about this. So the important thing, though, is, of course, that when we fix the values of the multipliers, then this is still, if you wish, a non-convex mixed integer nonlinear programming problem. But, of course, the advantage that we have in this case is that this problem is at least smaller. It's easier to solve because if, as an example, for one given scenario, I have something like, say, 50 variables and I have, let's say, 100 different scenarios, well, now I'm faced with just solving a 50-variable problem and not solving a 5,000, you know, full-dimensional problem. So that's clearly just simply the basic idea that we can then, of course, globally optimize each sub-model. And as is well known, the solution of the of each of these problems, if we add the corresponding global optimum solutions, this will provide actually a valid lower bound to the original problem. So actually, one of the possible approaches that we could take to solve these large-scale problems is to say, well, why don't we just simply dualize, as we've done here, globally optimize each of the subproblems, and then use that, for example, within the context of a branch and bound search, like, for example, based on the ideas of Carroll and Schultz, where you do appropriate branching between the continuous and the discrete variables. Now, what we have done is actually not to go through that route, but rather what we'd still like to do here is to combine, if you wish, spatial branch and bound, because I think there are some clear advantages in the terms of, again, exploiting some of the spatial structures like the ones that Chris mentioned before. So we'd like to combine spatial branch and bound with Lagrangian decomposition. And the basic idea here is that because we're seeing this weakening of the bounds in the branch and bound, we'd like, again, as also Chris had in his presentation, to improve or tighten, if we see, the relaxation of this original problem. Now, so the branch and cut algorithm that I'm going to be describing has the following elements. First, it has this element of cut generation. And the element of cut generation really has to do about solving to global optimality these dual subproblems. But the main purpose is not really to solve these problems to eventually converge to the global optimum, but rather just simply to generate some of these cuts that may hopefully then improve the relaxation in the spatial branch and bound method. So basically what we're going to then do in the lower bounding problem where we have the relaxation, remember this relaxation is going to come from where? It's going to come from the specific functional forms that we're going to be exploiting, like again bilinear or maybe trilinear, and we're going to add to these relaxations, these Lagrangian cuts, which in fact are going to be convexified Lagrangian cuts that I'm going to be describing in a moment. And of course, then how do we obtain the upper bound? Well, the upper bound, what we're going to do, since we have to solve at each node a mixed integer nonlinear program, we're going to solve to global optimality, or in the or if not, at least obtain a feasible solution to a non-convex problem by fixing the corresponding integer variables. And I'm not going to go here into all the details, but basically, since, of course, we're borrowing still the basic structure of the spatial branch and bound method, and we're just simply improving, if you wish, the relaxation of the lower bounding problem, you can still, of course, guarantee global optimality within a epsilon tolerance. So let me then describe, again, very briefly in more detail what is exactly involved here. So remember, what we want to do for our lower bounding problem is we're going to rely on convex relaxations, convex envelopes for some of these problems, and also to form Lagrangian decomposition. Now, specifically, the Lagrangian cut that we're proposing here is shown here by this expression, C of n. What it really corresponds to is basically, of course, the right-hand side is nothing else but the Lagrange function, but with two important features here. First of all, notice that here we're writing x and y we're not writing the variables in terms of the disaggregated variables. So these are the original variables. And furthermore, in this cut, as you can see, basically what it states is that the global optimum solution of that subproblem, z star of n, should be less or equal than this Lagrange function. Also notice that we have the terms s, x of y, r, u of n, and these could be non-convex terms. So in some sense, this could be regarded as being, if you wish, a quote, non-convex cut, which of course we cannot use directly as such. So basically what we're going to be doing then here is to generating some of these inequalities, and these are being generated for each of the different scenarios, all right? And we're going to be using multipliers. Now, in principle, it's actually arbitrary how you actually select these multipliers over what we're following here, sort of the usual and well-known sort of Fisher updating procedure, where you start with some given initial estimates, and then we just keep updating these bounds. So how do we then incorporate these cutting planes, if you wish, into the MINLP relaxation? Well, here, this is what I'm presenting. This would be the MINLP relaxation that we are creating, if you wish, at each node. What it means is basically each of the functions, S bar, R bar, H bar, and so forth, these would correspond to the convexified functions from the original non-convex function. So again, if I had here, for example, a bilinear terms, then we're going to be introducing, of course, the equivalent of the new variables and the corresponding convex envelope. So we do that for each of the functions, and then we're going to be adding these cuts. Strictly speaking, we could add here, of course, an extra index in the sense that we can add as many cuts as we want. And that's one of the issues when you deal with a branch and cut procedure. There's always, of course, a question, how many cuts do you add at each node? And unfortunately, the answer to that is, you know, it has to be somewhat empirical. But this is then going to be basically the MINLP relaxation, where again, the only thing that we're adding here are these Lagrange cuts. Now, mind you, when you think about generating these cuts, these are not cheap cuts necessarily, because in order to generate these cuts, what you really need to do is to globally optimize for each of the periods, okay, or sorry, for each of the scenarios. And then also notice here we have S bar and R bar. So these are being, if you wish, convexified cuts that we're adding to the problem. Now, what are some of the things that we can mention about a problem like this one? Well, first of all, of course, that this problem does provide a valid lower bound. Now, what is the, if you wish, property that we're exploiting here? Well, it's actually fairly easy to show that the Lagrangian cuts that are described by this expression are valid cuts in the sense that they do not cut off any mixed integer portion of the feasible region of the original problem. The proof is actually quite straightforward. It's well known, relies on duality theory. There's two properties also that we can mention. The first one is also quite straightforward, which is simply states that the lower bound that we're obtaining by solving this MINLP with the cuts is going to be at least as strong as the one with the relaxation. That's just simply because, of course, we're adding additional constraints. So obviously, the lower bound will have to be at least the same, if not better. The one that maybe is not, at least at first sight, so obvious is the second proposition, which states that the lower bound obtained by solving the MINLP with the cuts is at least as strong as if we had used Lagrangian decomposition. And that's a nice and interesting result, because it does support the idea that combining Lagrangian decomposition with spatial branch and bound is actually a good thing to do, because we're going to be able to improve these bounds. Again, it turns out the actual proof of this proposition is not very difficult. It's fairly straightforward. It comes from the fact that when you obtain the solution of each of the subproblems and you add them, you obtain strict equality, and that equality is always going to be dominated by this cut that we have here. So the remarks that we can make then are, first of all, although in principle generating these cuts could be expensive, the important thing is that they're parallelizable, in the sense that because this is being decomposed into n parallel problems, we could do that. Again, I mentioned before about the updating, we could do that in the case of Fisher. And again, because now we also have the feature that we're going to be able to solve as subproblems, lower dimensionality problems, we can rely on standard solvers. In our case, we've been using the cold firing techniques like Nitis has developed and that I guess you'll be describing later in some more detail. So let me just try to give you sort of a very simple geometric interpretation of what is really happening here. So suppose you have this integer space, and here in red this would be sort of the non-convex region. And in this case, let's say this might or might not be the global optimum. Might be, say, an initial upper bound to the problem. So what happens is when you apply, or when we apply convex envelopes to the relaxation to the problem, we're going to obtain, for example, these set of constraints. And again, these could be coming from McCormick, or it could be this nice book by Mohit and Nick, where there's a lot of exposition on some of these. And the problem is, of course, when you solve the new convexified problem, at least in the relaxed space, you might obtain a lower bound just like the one that we have here. Now, in the case when we add, and that, of course, may lead to, as I mentioned before, to weak bound. So what we're doing here is just simply to say, well, we would like to add these new Lagrangian cuts, which are going to enclose a lot better, if you wish, the original region. And because of that, of course, the lower bound that we had initially is not going to be made infeasible, and hopefully that will then improve the lower bound. So again, very simple geometric interpretation and idea. So let me describe very briefly the basic steps of the algorithm. So first of all, in step one, we have this initialization step, the setting of variable bounds. This is really a pre-processing step. One of the things that I think is very clear in all the convex envelopes, again, like what Chris described before, is really, at least in terms of applications, how crucial it is to come up with these lower and upper bounds on the variables, because they have a tremendous impact on how tight the problems might be. So in this case, we are going to be relying specifically on the given applications to do a pre-processing to obtain these better bounds. Secondly, I think this is sort of an optional step, is again with the idea of hopefully having good bounds for the variables, we can perform a bound contraction. It could be all the way to actually minimizing each variable individually, even for some large problems. But again, in applications, we find out that often there are some, quote, key variables, so you really don't need to necessarily optimize the bounds for every single variable in the problem. And then in step three, what we do, and this is in preparation for the cut, we formulate the Lagrangian relaxation. We derive the model as we've done before, separate it into subproblems, and then we solve each subproblem to global optimality, and then we generate the cutting planes that I mentioned before. And of course, you have to decide how many cutting planes you'd like to do. Then what we do in step four, we convexify the original model and solve the relaxation to which we have added these cuts, and this is going to then again predict the lower bound. Then in order to obtain the upper bound, what we're doing here is at each node, then we fix these binary variables, and then we globally optimize the resulting non-convex problem. It is a continuous problem, and by the way, here very often once you fix the binary variables, it's always possible to also tighten the bounds in that sense, increase the efficiency. And termination was given, of course, when the lower bound exceeds the upper bound, when we're within epsilon tolerance, or when we find that the solution of the problems gives actually a feasible solution to the original problem. A major issue here, like in any branch and bound type of method, especially when you have both continuous and discrete variables, is how do you do the branching. And what we have done here, I'm not going to describe in detail, but it's very much inspired by the work by Carreau and Schulz on how to do the partitioning for both the continuous and for the discrete variables, which are really, if you wish, some specific heuristics. And again, as I mentioned before, this can be guaranteed to epsilon convergence. So let me also make the following point. One of the things that one could argue, let me go back maybe here, in the algorithm in step four, is that this step four can be still extensive, right, in the sense because we're going to be solving a fairly large spatial branch and bound, but now hopefully with a good lower bound. So the question arises is there anything that we can do when the problem really gets potlucks, and even that bit could become a bottleneck. So it turns out that for that, and this is just a remark, it's not something we have actually implemented, but of course you could also think of a hybrid type of method where what you do is basically combine the proposed algorithm with conventional Lagrangian decomposition. And just to give you an idea how that may be performed, so suppose you have a problem P that, for example, has 10 submodels or 10 scenarios, if you wish, and let's say that that by itself may give rise, you know, to a rather large relaxation problem. So what we could do is, for example, let's say the first 5 submodels we could group into this single subproblem P5, and that subproblem P5 we could actually solve with the proposed algorithm, in the sense that's the one we would be using, for example, the cutting plane technique, and all the others would be just simply being optimized simultaneously. That could happen. Where would that type of problem make sense? It makes sense especially when we do spatial decomposition, where, for example, each of these smaller, if you wish, submodels would correspond to simpler process units, whereas maybe the 5 here is where you have a lot more stronger interactions. But again, I just simply point this out because it is obvious that, again, one could think of combining both Lagrangian decomposition and then have as a subproblem one where we use the corresponding cut. Now, let me give you first a very simple problem. This is a toy problem. It has, as you can see, just simply 1 binary variable, 19 continuous variables, 10 constraints, and 15 non-convex terms. So basically, we have 1 single continuous variable x, 1 discrete variable y, 0, 1. And as you can see, we have here a set of 6 inequality constraints. And these are 3 pairs of constraints that are decomposable. So the first two have a subindex 1, the second subindex 2, the third subindex 3, which they decompose into that. And the linking constraints become through these inequality constraints. And the question is, you know, how does the proposed method perform for a simple problem like this one? Incidentally, I should say, by the way, if you solve this little toy problem, for example, with Baron, I think it would take like 0.1 seconds, so this would be a very simple problem for that. Here is the basic idea, it's just simply to illustrate the ideas of the model. So what we did here, again, we have 3 submodels, and we need to select arbitrarily. In this case, we said we're going to generate 2 cuts for each of the submodels. So we generate 6 cutting planes, and as you can see, in the root node, you can see the lower bound that is predicted by the algorithm is 64.01, and the upper bound that we obtain is actually 64.499. So very clearly, at least in this very simple tiny example, we have already within 1%, actually quite a bit less than 1% tolerance. The question is, how do we do? Because, by the way, I should also, let me just go back here, did forget to mention, in this problem, the only source of non-convexity are the bilinear terms in the non-linking constraints. Otherwise, the problem is linear in the objective. So that's the only source of the non-convexity. So the question is, how does this perform if we use, for example, standard relaxations? Well, you can see in the case where you use a standard relaxation, like in this case the McCormick convex envelopes, the lower bound drops from 64 to 61.6. It's still not too bad, but still, you know, definitely lower. In the case of Lagrangian decomposition, it's actually, again, not that far, 63.3. But, you know, as I explained before from the properties, this clearly also shows very clearly that the bounds that are obtained either by straight relaxation or by Lagrangian decomposition are generally weaker than the ones with the proposed method. So let me now, Now, this is, again, we're still within a tolerance. If you want to reduce within a gap of 0.1%, this is essentially the branch and bound tree that is required. And again, in each of these cases, we would be generating 2 cuts in order to obtain the desired tolerance. Now, I'm going to switch now to 2 applications that I mentioned before, the one of water networks and the one of crude oil scheduling problems. So in this table, what I have here, so example 1 was this simple toy problem that I presented before. Problems 2, 3, and 4 are going to be the scheduling problems. And you'll notice in terms of the size, well, the scheduling problems are of the order 50, 0, 1 variables, about 300 variables, and of the order of 1,000 variables. In the case of the synthesis problem, which is really the water problem, these range 24, 77, 0 ones, and of the order of 800 to 1,200 continuous variables, and roughly the same thing for the number of constraints. So you can see these are fairly large problems. And before I go into the description of the problem, again, just to give you first sort of the overall view, so in the toy problem, we already saw, of course, that the lower bound that we're obtaining at the root node is actually quite close to the global optimum compared to the standard relaxation. The next three problems, the ones for the scheduling, this is the global optimum, and I should mention that this is the relaxation of a mixed integer linear program that we're going to be solving as part of the problem. So what we really need to compare here is the lower bound that we obtain at the root node of the MILP, which you can see is still, you know, significant improvement with respect to the original problem. And then in the case of the water problem, again, this is the global optimum, and you can see the relaxation at the root node with the proposed cost is actually quite close to the global optimum, and certainly in this case, especially quite a bit of an improvement with respect to the standard relaxation. But let me, what I'm going to be doing now is, because I think especially examples 5 and 6 are, from a practical point of view, really, I think, very important and meaningful problems, so I'd like to talk about them. So the first one deals with the synthesis of integrated water systems, and I think needless to say, this is an extremely important area because water, as you know, is a scarce resource, maybe not in Canada, I should say. I think we have maybe more than what you need, but there are certain parts of the world where water is indeed a big problem. And here, from a processing point of view, the conventional type of system is what is called a centralized system. PU1, 2, and 3, these would be processing units that require or are consuming fresh water. So, for example, here we have 40, 50, 60, 150 tons per hour, and then the water that is picking up contaminants here has to go through these treatment units, where you have things like biological treatment, you have things like filtration, and then you bring it down to a desired level of parts per million. So in this very simple system, you have 150 tons per hour that are being consumed. And the question is, can we come up with a better scheme than this centralized system, where especially a major objective is to reduce the consumption of fresh water, and in particular to minimize the cost. And we're going to see that this problem actually gives rise, even if we use the simplest type of model, a global optimization problem. So first of all, for the case of the alternatives, what we're going to do here, we develop this, what we call a superstructure, where what we're considering is the fresh water that is coming in can be placed into these mixers. Then we have these two process units, and the reason we have these interconnections, as we'll see in a moment, they will allow the reuse. So, for example, you may send water to this unit, and the outlet, some of the water of the outlet of that unit may be sent to this mixer that is then being used for process unit 2. And likewise, in the case of the treatment units, rather than handling the big flow of water, you may be distributed type of flows. And just to get an idea of the alternatives, if you delete a subset of the streams, for example, this would be the alternative correspond to the centralized system. You get the fresh water to the two process units, and you go in sequence to the two treatment units. But an alternative could be like this one, where fresh water only goes to unit 1, then you reuse it to unit 2, and then you do similarly thing here for the treatment unit. And furthermore, this can even become more complicated in the sense you may even have recycles after the treatment, again with the whole purpose at the end of reducing the consumption of fresh water. Now, this is only when you have a single snapshot. The problem is these systems are operating in reality under uncertainty. Now, the uncertainty comes basically from the fact that you have these contaminants that are coming in. These could be things like salts, copper, and so forth. And then you also have uncertainty from the contaminants that are leaving the treatment units, because the recoveries are not going to be always uniform. So basically, the two uncertain parameters that we're looking at here are the contaminant loads, and then the removal ratios that we have in the treatment unit. And what we're going to assume here is that we have, if you wish, different values at different points in time, which really translates to a discrete distribution. So the uncertainty then here can be handled at the design stage. And this is going to be really, as we can see, a mixed integer nonlinear programming problem, because qualitatively we're going to be assigning 0-1 variables to the strings. These are the links that define the structure. And then, of course, continuous variables, especially flows and concentrations. So we're going to then consider n different scenarios. And this is, first of all, the objective function. So this is really like a two-stage programming problem. So the first stage cost, these would correspond to the cost. In the cost, the first term here, the y variables would be the design variables related to the existence of a pipeline, an interconnection. It's a 0-1 variable. And f hat is what is the maximum flow that can go through that. Now, the cost function, if you notice, is f raised to some power. So this is a concave cost function, and this is linear. And then also we have here the corresponding cost for the treatment unit, f hat, which is the flow that you're handling raised to some power. So simply concave cost function. The remaining terms, like cost of the fresh water, is linear, and also in terms of the actual operating expenses. So the two concave terms that we have is just simply here in terms of the objective function. Now, it turns out, by the way, when you write the model like this one, there's two major alternatives. You can write it in terms of individual flows and split fractions, or flows and concentration. We've used here total flows and concentration. So in the mixing units, like we saw, it's simply a linear mass balance. The flow, you know, going out is whatever comes in. And then here, the contaminant balance, C is the concentration of the contaminants. That's where we have the bilinear term. So it's the flow times the concentration. Now, the rest of the equations, in the case of the splitting units, you have the sum of flows, which is linear, and the contaminant balance, in this case, the concentration gets maintained, so this is a simple linear constraint. Then you have the process units. In the case of the process units, this term here, this would be the load. This would be the unturned parameter that I mentioned. So this is a contaminant balance. And then you have the treatment units. For the treatment units, this factor beta is just simply the recovery fraction. Now, in reality, the models could be a lot more complicated. So here we are actually using already, in that way, a simplified model. And again, the only linearity comes in here. Now, it turns out in the model, we've also adding some special strengthening cuts. I think in the first presentation, it was mentioned that often you do want to exploit the structure of the problem. And here, this was totally based, if you wish, on physical observation of the problem. We found out that if you go back to the previous slide, that since we're going to be relaxing one of the mass balances related to the mixer, what happens is that the total mass balance will no longer hold true. So in other words, the contaminants going in are not going to be the same as the contaminants going out. So it turns out that very simple observation can be translated into this equation, which is really a redundant equation, but it's actually an equation that we can see actually strengthen the lower bound quite significantly. Then we have the design constraints here. That's where we relate the 0-1 variables with the variables f hat. If y is equal to 0, there's no flow allowed. If y is equal to 1, it's going to be within some lower and upper bounds. And then the linking constraints would be the f hat being greater or equal than the flow that we can have, of course, at each of the scenarios. Now, in order to formulate the relaxation of the problem, we replace the term the flow times concentration by small f and write the corresponding equations. And likewise, where we had the corresponding terms for the concave cost functions, we define a new variable, and we then just simply replace them with corresponding convex and concave envelopes. I think, again, for this audience, this is pretty standard. So what we're doing is for the linear terms, the product of flow times concentration, we're using the well-known McCormick convex envelopes. But again, here, I do want to insist, when I mentioned before about the pre-processing, it turns out especially that's why concentration is a good way to formulate this problem, because the window of concentrations is much narrower than where you deal with with individual flows that can range from zero to whatever value. And again, so the pre-processing is then more critical in terms of the actual flows. And in the case of concave functions, well, we use the standard secant function here. Let me present one of the examples. So in this case, we have two process units. This is the flow that they're consuming. And A and B would be the two contaminants. And you can see that we have 10 different scenarios, and for each of the scenarios, these values keep changing. Likewise, what we have for the treatment units. We have treatment unit 1, treatment unit 2, and this would be the fraction that we're recovering, like contaminant A, contaminant B. Now, these 10 different scenarios have the probabilities that are being assigned here. Now, of course, a good question might be, where did these data come from? Who came up with these data? Well, the way to gather this data, you actually go to a plant and measure for some period of time these values, and then based on that, that's how you basically would come up basically with these scenarios with their corresponding probabilities. So you can see scenario 1 has 20%, whereas, for example, scenario 10 has only 5% probability. And these are some an important specification here is that the water has to be discharged with 10 parts per million or below. That's the EPA specifications. Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. I'm actually almost done. Yeah. So this is the solution to the problem. You can see the corresponding problem size. I think one of the by the way, the numbers that I have here correspond to the maximum flows. Okay. And an important thing here is that in terms of the freshwater consumption, the maximum that is needed here is 40, when in fact the maximum is 90. So that means actually, in terms of the global optimization, that's why it's so important, we're able to reduce by more than one half the consumption of the water. This 651, again, is, as I mentioned before, the global optimum of the problem. And as we saw before, this was the local optimum. And basically, in this case, it took roughly 1 minute to solve the subproblem at the root node. And then, of course, if you're still not satisfied with this tolerance, you can continue. I don't remember quite in this case. I think it took something like 4 or 5 more nodes to reduce it to something like 0.05% tolerance. Very briefly, this is the scheduling problem that arises in refineries. You have ships coming with crude. You can have pipelines. You have crude arrivals. Now, these tanks could be storage tanks, or these could be charging tanks. Charging tanks are the ones where you send the crude to the distillation columns where you perform the separation of the crude. So the problem then here is you're given a scheduling horizon, you're given inventories, you're given properties, and what you need to determine here from an optimization standpoint is when do you order the crudes, how do you manage the flow of crudes throughout the system, and how much product you're going to be producing in these distillation columns. Well, what we've done here, it turns out the scheduling, because it's over a given time horizon, a common approach is to discretize time. And with discretized time, in a way, it's easier, but it's not as accurate. So what we've done here is to use a continuous time formulation. It's actually based by Kevin Furman and Marianta Yerapetitu. It's actually worked also with Chris on this problem. The problem is formulated as MINLP. I'm not going to describe here in detail the model as I did before, but you can see the objective function has terms like waiting costs for the supply streams, inventory costs, setup costs, and really the only, it turns out that here for the distillation units we're using simple splits, so these are linear models. Where you get the bilinearities is in the tank constraints, because that's where you get, of course, the mixing effect, or if you wish, of the various crudes. Now in this case, what we decided to do, rather than using the type of approach I described before, in the sense of being a spatial branch and bound, this is more like an outer approximation algorithm where for fixed 0-1 variables you solve a nonlinear programming problem. When you fix that, you may solve that to global optimality. And then what you left here is the NMILP master problem. And it's this part that really becomes sort of the bottleneck in the computations here. And that's where we're applying, if you wish, the Lagrangian-based COPs. So in essence, what we're doing here, this is just simply to illustrate for simplicity. So let's say you have the system. You may decompose it into subsystem D1, D2. How many subsystems you want to decompose again, that's going to be the function of the user. And then, as we did before, when you dualize, you then have each of the subproblems. And for each of these subproblems, when you solve them to optimality, which in this case these are linear, then you obtain the corresponding Lagrangian cuts, which then gives us, of course, a valid lower bound. Again, these are three examples that we solved, as you recall. And physically, these were three supply streams, up to 6 tanks, 4 charging tanks, and 2 to 3 distillation units. So these are fairly realistic problem sizes. And as you can see, this is the lower bound obtained by solving the proposed relaxation, 281. That means the MLP that we're solving within the iterative algorithm. That is the upper bound. So you can see actually in example 3, we obtain a zero gap already in the first solution. So that means we're obtaining some very strong lower bounds. And two points that are interesting to note here. We also solve the problem with DICOT, which is, of course, not performing global optimization. In the last problem, we do obtain the same solution, but in the other problems, we do obtain suboptimal solutions. And again, in the case of Perturon type of applications, these could be fairly large problems. Also notice these would correspond, actually, the calculations only at the first iteration, and these are already taking of the order of, you know, something like 2 hours, and this one something like 10 minutes. So that's basically the time frame. I should also mention, we did try to solve Baron this, and we could not get a solution to the problem. And again, it goes back to the issue of size that I mentioned before. And again, lastly, this is just simply the comparison of time when you add the cuts, when you add the cuts versus when you don't add the cuts. It's very clear that the time is reduced quite substantially. So with this, let me just finish again saying, try to propose a branch and cut algorithm. I think we've shown a number of cases, very significant reductions. And I think here, as always, the main issue has been to obtain tighter relaxation of non-convex models. And I think the important thing, however, at the end, has been sort of the application to these real-world problems. Okay. So with this, I'd like to thank your attention. Be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.